Freaking news, everybody. Can't believe it. Malcolm, what a star you are. You've won the Moosaroo Cup.
So happy. I'm thrilled. I can't imagine how I feel. I would like to thank my mum, all the people that believed in me. I can't believe it. Thank you very much to everyone who's supported me over these years. I can't wait to,
Malcolm,
go to other competitions with it and take it and get gold everywhere.
Malcolm, wake up. You're going to spill your tea.
Hello and welcome, or welcome back. I am Malcolm Childs.
And I'm James Giffins, and we are Just Making Conversation,
the podcast where we discuss the ins and outs of the model making hobby that brings us joy and pain in equal measures.
From Primer to Primark and everything in between, we are just going to make conversation. Remember, there are other podcasts to listen to.
Plastic Model Mojo.
The Scal Model Podcast.
Or Plastic Posse Podcast.
On the Bench.
The Model Geeks.
This Brew Cutters Union.
Small Subjects.
Built Sideways.
Model by Garpone.
The Micro Machines Podcast. Head over to modelpodcast.com for all the links.
Because you've enjoyed our podcast,
you know you've loved it.
Consider leaving a 5-star review, as it promotes this podcast for more people to enjoy.
Showing your support to us is as easy as making a cup of coffee. Why not go over to buymeacoffee.com/JMC podcast and do just that? Your support will go towards making the podcast and its content a little bit more palatable. In this episode, we're just going to be making conversation with Carl Robert Shaw, the awesome model maker of last year's spectacular Dam Busters Lancaster.
Inspiration has never been so boldly displayed. Bringing art into our world and opening up the question again, are we artists or just model makers?
So to find out all the nitty-gritty of just how this idea came to life, it's a no-brainer to get the model maker in that hot seat. Have we got any comments this week?
No. Yes.
Obviously, you would have all seen it, I'm sure. The new merchandise idea of the Sippy Cup. It was a joke. However, I do have an order book of about 6 orders. If you want them, just contact me privately. Don't tell Malcolm because he'll get upset. Timothy Young, he said, will it handle bourbon? It will handle any liquid of any description you so desire.
Will you be able to dunk bourbons in there?
Well, no, because it's a Sippy Cup. You can't dunk bourbons, and you're talking about bourbons.
Oh, sorry, yes,
I am. You don't dunk bourbons. This is a Hobnob channel. Don't bring in other biscuits. Honest to God, what will our sponsor ever think of us?
I don't know. Thank you, Timothy, for that comment. Ray Davis said, talking about this Sippy Cup ridiculousness that you came up with. Hi, guys, he says, if I buy 2, do you throw in a dummy? And so that when we build difficult kits, we can have a dummy spit.
Yes, we did look at branding dummies as well, and we can do that.
When I wear a T-shirt, that's Just Making Conversation dummy. Anyway, go on. Next.
David Farrell says, if I buy 3, can I have the 3rd at the same price? Yes, is the answer. You can. If you bought 1, you could have a 2nd one at exactly the same price.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Bargain.
Victor said, oh, it's a bit pricey. If you haven't seen the Facebook post, it was a Sippy Cup with Just Making Conversation on the front on Facebook, and it was April 1st, of course. Harriet said, cheaper than continuously buying aftermarket decals. Yes, it would be. Spilling stuff on the desk, mm-hmm, is what you do.
And Patrick says, actually not a bad idea.
Yes, well, if you spill something, you, that's the first thing you think is like, oh, I wish I had a lid on it.
That's the first thing. The second thing is, where's my dickles?
Yes.
But I promise not to trigger you this week. And this comment isn't written down, but I'd like to thank those who reached out to me with all your comments saying it was absolutely lovely to hear Malcolm triggered. There was a lot of enjoyment from that. I promised Malcolm I wouldn't say anything about it this week.
When did people start saying triggered? When you really mean deeply hurt and upset? Is that what you mean?
You weren't deeply hurt.
I was deeply hurt. I was right down to the skin. No, the bone.
Oh, dear.
Anyway.
The only other comment we had was in relation to our wonderful group build that we've just started. The Facebook page is up. The Great Tarp group build is up and running. We've got 12 members already. And there's a lot of excitement, would you believe? I don't know if they're bots, but there are 12 people that are signed up.
So, yeah, about the TARP build, Ken Reed and both Ron Milne separately suggested to me that we called the Great TARP build TARP of the Morning to you, which I think was very clever.
I will be using that phrase, but for a slightly different reason. And that is because I did make a promise in our last episode that I would post a TARP a day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not a week in yet, and I have failed a couple of days, but I have started as I mean to go on. Which doesn't mean I'm going to keep forgetting. It means I am going to post up. So what I might do is I might change the post to, instead of TARP, one TARP a day, I'm going to change it to TARP of the Morning to you.
That is nice. Yeah.
I like that.
That's good.
I'm going to steal that. Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Ron. But yeah, so the Great TARP build, if you're not aware of it, then obviously, where have you been? A little bit along the same lines as what we did last year with our Great Nut build. We've chosen a forgotten subject and we've decided to highlight it. We use the TARP on our models to hide things, or it's an unloved part. So we want to highlight the TARP. You can make your TARP out of any material what you like. You can make it any scale you like. You can stick it over whatever model you want. It could be a TARP on its own, lost in the woods.
Oh.
It could be anything, absolutely anything.
Lost TARP. Oh. You know, kind of limply hanging over a tree.
A lost TARP in the woods. There we go.
It's interesting. I keep seeing TARPs everywhere now. The TARP on the face of every child. No. I see every time I'm looking at a model, I go, oh, it's a TARP on that. like nudge, nudge. Can't wait to start mine. I haven't got any great ideas yet. I've seen, you know, people with a model and are whacking a great big load of TARP over it, or I've seen things being rolled up in the back of tanks and things like that, but I haven't seen anything that's really smacked me in the face with an awesome TARP idea.
I thought you were going to recreate what we saw at Duxford.
Yes. Did I say that I was going to do that?
No, I just assumed. It was an assumption because you were so fascinated and enthralled by the TARP that we stood there and looked at for over an hour and a half. That and you took, in fairness, you ran out of film because you took that many pictures. I just assumed you were going to use it.
I hadn't even thought about that, you know. The original TARP.
The original TARP. And that's the name of the diorama and everything.
The original TARP, where it all started. The STARP of the build.
Jesus. Terrible. Oh,
I'm going to have to write that down because I will forget that. Do you remember what tank it was?
Well, it was actually at the back of Duxford. There were Russian trucks. And next to the Russian truck was what I can only term as a square block thing that had a TARP over it. But we were fascinated with the TARP and we lost interest in what was underneath the TARP. We were looking at the TARP.
Yeah, okay. I'll have a look.
Moosaroo Cup, the Moosaroo Cup. Let's talk about the Moosaroo Cup. Boom!
Woohoo!
Yep.
We didn't win. UK did not win. And Mr. John Banana, he won it with a stonking build, and, you know, quite rightly so. Well done, you, mate. Well done. Absolutely brilliant. We put a picture up, didn't we, when the news came out. I believe you watched it live, didn't you?
No, I actually had the video sent to me live. I actually missed the live video feed, but caught it moments after it had been announced. But yes, I had my my on-the-spot reporter was on-the-spot reporting, as they do.
If you don't know what the Moosaroo Cup is, it is a competition between the Scale Modelling Podcasts, ran by IPMS Hamilton in Canada, sternly supported by the folks at Lightspeed Global. They do everything, run everything, you know, write the theme tune, sing the theme tune, everything. Yeah, and they send us all a kit. And we build it and we try and beat everyone, do the best build. This one was a Mustang. It was tricky, as I've said before. But well done to John, or JB, as they call him, on the Plastic Posse. Well done. It's a beautiful thing. people said to me before, they said to me,
What are you building, Mal? Well, I listen to your podcast and I don't know.
So, well, okay, well, I'll tell you. We don't really do a bench update on here, do we?
No, not really. The main reason is that I can't sit here for 20 minutes listening to Malcolm telling me what he's done and then respond with a,
well, yeah, I've managed to clean my desk.
Oh, that's not true.
No, I've done a little bit, actually. I managed to muck around with my frame from the 48-hour build. I've managed to get that together.
Yeah.
But I've been super busy. I've got lots of things going on, lots of irons in the fires and all that boring, yawny stuff.
That's life, mate.
However, I am about to embark on a dual build.
A dual build?
Hmm. So I've got two Spitfires I've got to build, and that is going to start any time soon.
Wow. Oh, I can't wait to see that. That'll be a YouTube video, isn't it?
But so basically, to put some meat on the bones, I've got the new Airfix 124th Spitfire, and I'm going to build it alongside the old 124th Spitfire. And do a comparison video of what's in the kit. So, yeah, it'll be a couple of series long.
That's cool.
I'm waiting for some paints to arrive from my wonderful little man. And, yeah, I'm going to crack on. So I'm at the point now. As soon as I know that paint's in the post, I'm going to start actually bending some plastic.
Cool. Well done. I'm doing the Models for Heroes group build, which is the Shelf of Doom group build. I've got an AT-ST Bandai one that was doing nothing. Purchased the kit and it was already built inside, which I knew. But I've turned that into a Models for Heroes delivery system, forklift AT-ST thing. I'm turning it into like an old JCB as well, yellow and got chipping on it. And yada yada.
It's awesome.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we'll have to put pictures up of these things now we talked about.
Yes, we will.
Write that down.
Yes, I'm writing it down right now.
I can hear muffled screams from next door.
You can?
Yeah, muffled noises and shuffling. Do we have someone in the green room?
Oh, we might do.
Did we forget?
Yeah, I think we maybe did.
Didn't we have someone go into the green room last week? We've forgotten about them.
Have they been in there a week already?
Maybe. Oops. They have, yeah. Should we go and see if they're okay?
We better go and see if they're still there in one piece.
Yeah, so we've got Carl Robert Shaw, who is the builder of the Lancaster that everyone saw in Telford, and we're going to interview him. So yes, we're going to play that interview now. We'll edit it in like he was here.
Well, by the time you listen to this, he would have been here.
What I'll do is I'll edit it to make it smooth.
Oh, that'll be a first.
I might need a wee shortly. As
now, didn't Mummy tell you to do that before you came out?
Yeah, she usually does. Usually says, empty tanks before we go out. Did say drop tanks? That'll be something else. Just empty
oh,
tanks.
No, that's completely... That's this.
Anyway, we're supposed to be doing an interview. Carl, we're live. We'll just go straight into it.
Brilliant.
Do you want to introduce yourself? Would you like to tell us and the listeners, why you're here and why you think you're on Just Making Conversation?
Okay, so my name's Carl Robert Shaw. I'm a designer, been working in the events industry for the last 25 years. I have a passion for kites and kite design and kite flying, and models is a sideline hobby stroke semi-professional thing that ties in with the creative processes that I do with designing for theatre and stages, thinking about things that fly as well, which is ties in with kites for the past, 10, 15 years. And I have a relationship with Tamiya Model Magazine. So that's grown, and I've been to Telford for the past 10, 12 years as well, helping out on the stand there. Again, helping set up a stand, that's part of events. And 10 years ago, in 2012, I had the idea of modelling water, and the large Lancaster was coming out, and I got captivated by that idea, and that has now been realised.
Can I just stop you? 2012?
2012 was when the kind of seed of the idea dropped. So it's been going for that long, and it's been a scratch that I've had to itch. It's one of those things I've not been able to put it down. And the only way to actually sort of sleep at night is to work through the project and do it. So yeah. Now I actually sleep, whereas before I didn't.
Just to underline then, Carl, you are the maker, the creator and the inventor and everything of the Lancaster Dambusters model that was in Scale Model World. The correct. Huge one that anyone that would have gone to Scale Model World that year would have seen before they even got into the competition. You would sure. have seen that thing from the other side of the hall.
I didn't manage to see it in person, but I'm in awe of it since the first moment I saw it.
I think I sent you photographs, didn't I, from when I was there. I said, look at that.
Yes.
Bloody thing. It's huge.
So the interesting thing is, obviously, the anniversary is coming up in May of the Operation Chastise.
Correct.
So it just happens to be really falling in quite well with our schedule and the anniversary for us to talk to you about it. Part of your profession is model making and all that sort of thing. I got asked just the standard boring first question, which is, when did you start doing model making? When did that seed start?
Gosh, it was with my dad, with a lot of kids, and I was probably 5 or 6. And the kit that I remember, I was going to say us making, so he made it, and me and my brother didn't do very much, but it was a 747. I think it was the Airfix, first Boeing 747, which probably everybody's built, back in those days. And that was then. And then I carried on through to my teens and then sort of, in my 20s and so on, kites took over as an obsession. And then I came back to models proper, as in, not doing the kind of small, cheap things from Woolworths, but actually large Tamiya 132 scale. That's kind of been my, oh my God, this is amazing. Acrylic paints, the detail involved. This is such a step forwards of engineering that this is a whole new world now. So yeah, from then it's been very exciting to continue moving into the whole world of scale models and not necessarily sticking to one narrow road, but actually spreading out and trying different genres, you could say.
I mentioned kites, and I'm interested in just in that as well. And I wish I could do a whole nother podcast on that because that sounds really interesting. How does the kiting and the model making mix?
I've always grown up making things and I'm fascinated by how things work. So I got fascinated by a sewing machine, which sounds quite random, but they're amazing machines, and made a kite and it flew, and made another kite and it flew. And of course, flying things, planes, kites, kites, you can go outside, be active. It involves graphics and color and theater performance, the whole social thing as well. So I got hooked on that, created a team, went around the world flying with the team and with kites, and been doing that as well since, gosh, I was 19. So yeah, 30 plus years, 5 times world champion, and won lots and lots of events through kiting. So I have friends all over the world through that world, as it were. So that's kind of another subculture, nerdy geek sort of world, if you like, which is very similar to kites. And actually quite a few people who I knew through the kite world, I'm friends through modeling, and I know them through models more than I do through kites. But it's a very parallel pastime interest, if you like.
Yeah. I can imagine there's a bit more fresh air with kiting.
And also where people are maybe have social awkwardness, if you like, and have got a need to express themselves outwardly. Whereas I think in models, it's a kind of, there's an opposite sense of expressing yourself inwardly and going small, as it were, rather than going big. It's almost like turning the binoculars, or the microscope round, so one way you're looking at, everything's enlarged, and the other way, with scale models, it's all micro or macro, if you like.
One other question, and as we're looking at the parallel between kite making and model making, obviously in model making we have the rivet counters. Have you got a similar sort set within kiting, and what do you call them?
Often there's a Richard Head on a kite field who you avoid.
Right, okay.
So trying to be polite here.
Yes.
So, normally there's somebody who is going to burn your ear off about some little detail, or the stitch length, or this way, something, the small details that it's not worth sweating over, sort of thing. So
almost like a stitch counter,
maybe. Yeah. They don't have a name like a rivet counter. Rivet counter,
yeah, yeah.
Really, says describes it really really well. But
yeah. I would say that if you've got rivets, though, on your kite, that probably should be pointed out.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know much about kites.
So obviously, we're going to talk to you about the awesome model we made with the Lancaster. And you've explained it's been a project for that many years. Sure. So the first question is obviously it's a big beast, the model and the diorama. Just kind of clarify just how big it is and how much it weighs.
So the model itself, one question people say is how do you store it? Because this is not a kind of small model shoebox size. This is, I've actually got it here. So
careful, mind your back.
Yeah, I mean, you can see it, but.
Oh,
wow.
It's huge. So it's got a wingspan of a meter.
So for listeners, Carl just reached to his right and pulled over what looked like a small car.
The plane itself is, it's got a wingspan of a meter. It weighs 5 kilos, the kit itself. It's considerable. And so the water base, the resin base, it's a meter by 1.20 meters. It's a MDF box, and the top layer is kind of a tray, if you like, with 3 centimeters of resin.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about the base weighs 50 kilos. So with work, I have a van, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I have a wheelie trolley thing, you know, for carting heavy things around. So that goes hand in hand with me being able to cart this thing around. And then there's a steel frame, which is the, you know, like a picture frame, as it were, the slots on the outside as well. So it gets slightly bigger. So I had that commissioned because I ran out of time actually building the whole thing to get it ready for Telford. So that was commissioned. So that's this folded steel, powder coated or painted frame. And then the plume of water itself, that doesn't weigh much at all. And that's carbon fiber armature inside it. So the whole thing breaks apart. So it's not, doesn't travel as one thing. The plane travels in its own box with its wings sticking out aside, a bit like a kind of oversized aircraft in a hangar. Strapped down like every other model is, you know, with foam in the bottom and cocktail sticks.
No, I didn't imagine that at all. I think you would be transporting it that way, but yeah.
And it's fairly secure, you know, you can hold it upside down and all sorts. And, you know, people often say, oh, you must drive really carefully, but actually that's the secure bit sort of thing.
Yeah.
The base itself is just a great big heavy box. So, you know, and it's robust as well. So, yeah, it's not small.
When you were designing it and making it, was travel in mind then?
Yes. Designed to fit in the van. And designed to fit through doors. So, because, of course, you know, you can design something that then doesn't get out of the workshop or get through a door. So it's designed to get through a standard door, just big enough. I can go into talking about the composition of the whole thing, but the whole thing's raised up. And this frame around the outside is looks like it's floating, as it were. So there's a gap between the table and the frame. And mm-hmm. the slopes of the frame itself point towards the bomb bay itself. So they're angled, and the upkeep mine is directly center in the water. The orientation of the waves, wind, and the flight path are at 90 degrees, but the whole thing's angled at 30 degrees and 60 degrees on the base.
Right.
So that it's got dynamics, as it were,
yeah,
which right. means that one wingtip hangs over the outside. And of course, with the scale working out from the Imperial War Museum footage, black and white footage from Reculver, May the 12th. So there are two tests on that day. One was a little bit higher than the other. The low one is the one that I went with. There's a whole detective work as to which aircraft it actually was. But yeah, so working out the actual height as well. So then the height obviously plays into this so that the base is raised up so that what you're doing when you're viewing it on the table of Telford, so specifically designed for Telford, so the standard person would view the aircraft in the same eye line as the film still footage.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Oh my
so God. Scale, in terms of size, it's all composed to suit the viewer's point of view to replicate. You know, you're looking wingtip to wingtip, as it were, so your eye level is parallel with the aircraft.
Did you have to measure the height of a table at Telford before you started designing it?
Yeah.
That's incredible. And did you work out the average height of a British man or woman?
This is so when you hand pictures in a gallery, the centre of the pictures should be at 1.50 meters.
Right.
So going with that concept, as it were, that's roughly it. So really the aircraft itself is kind of hovering with the wings at about 1.50 meters off the floor.
That's amazing.
Wow.
I thought pouring a load of resin was impressive. That's a level of detail that I admire. It truly amazes me that you would go into that level of consideration. We did a podcast a while back on Series 1 about considering the room that you're in when you're judged. Yeah.
Okay.
So we talked about you might be influenced by who you are hanging next to in a gallery, for instance.
Sure.
You might be influenced by the title card might be printed badly. All those things go along to how you consider a piece of art. Yeah. But obviously, you're coming from that kind of a background as well. When you're considering the height of the person looking at it, that, I think that's incredible to bring that to the model world. Usually, you're looking down.
Exactly. And this image, as it were, is side on, which is great. But also, the models are also placed quite close together. So I sort of wanted to get a bit sharp elbow with it, as it were, so make the frame give a bit of breathing space around it. So this, you know, often like with typography or anything like with music, you need the pauses help to make the phrasing better, as it were. So in terms of the visual space around it, you know, this could be sort of crowded, if you like, or kind of hemmed in. So to actually be standing taller and also have the space around it to give it breathing space means that it starts to stand out. You know, you start to kind of stand on its own in a way.
It worked, standing out certainly. And I, like I said, I first walked into that hall, I saw it there.
And it is a great big white tower, as it were. So that's already quite bright, you know, in a room full of, you know, especially with a lot of, you know, armor, which is predominantly brown.
Now, obviously, you had no control about where the competition would be. So did you choose when you got there where you were going to put it on the table, like on purpose?
Or? Yes, and which way around as well. So that was. Yeah, it's the first time I've entered a competition, a model competition. And with my kite flying competition experience, I said I wouldn't enter models in competition because I know how judging goes and how objectivity and subjectivity is and all of that. But actually, like you say, it's a really good gallery. So it's a good place to put something like this, which how does it get an audience where it's not, you know, the idea is that this goes to a museum. Competition table is such a great gallery, as it were, where people are coming to look at, you know, and also it's a way for me to commit to myself in terms of creating something on a time scale but out of a standard that's worthy of actually being on this table. So yeah, I certainly thought about which way around it would be, which way it's facing, you know, what end of the table and so on. So yeah, interestingly, when we turned up, they had about, for the aircraft dioramas, they had about the amount of space that there was for this model, for mine, that was it. So we asked, can we have a bit more room? No, a bit more room. No, a bit more room. And a bit more room, because obviously it was going to grow. So yeah, you know, it needs to be put in beforehand, before all the other models are in, because of the weight of it. You know, it's going to shake the table, basically.
Right.
And also, it needs to come out afterwards. So you're the first in and last out with something of this weight.
Gosh, did you have to warn them that it was coming?
I did, yes. Of course, because the tables have to take the weight as well. So it's spread over two sets of table legs. So, yeah.
Wow. So all these things you don't think of. When you walk into a competition, all these things you don't think of.
Well, I've been thinking about it for 10 years. So it's that thing of, it started with the idea of how do you model water? Because you see quite amazing, you know, these amazing ship models and, you know, the water's done well or it's not so well, and it's the make or break of the whole thing. But you know, how do you model water really well? So that was my sort of line of inquiry, if you like, that sort of got me started in this. And then the Dan Buster story was so evocative and incredible that, you know, that's a great big, so it's got so much magnetism, so much gravity that pulls you right in. And you know, and then Hong Kong models were coming out with their large Lancaster, and then we had to wait. When they had announced theirs, then Wingnut Wings announced their version. So then it's a dilemma. I chose to wait. through lockdown, through the closing of Wingnut Wings, and then subsequently Border bringing theirs out and waiting for that to come out. So there's a long gestation period to potter around on the computer to draw this up. Also the base I'd made in 2017 ahead of time as well. So the water in the base was all done.
Was it cured?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Just took a while.
So, yeah, so that was all done, you know, finished off that off in lockdown. So before I even had the model, so.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't expect any of that. A little bit of planning, but yeah.
Yeah. And people ask as well, it's like, isn't it expensive? Well, yes, it is. And, I could never spend that much money. Well, I haven't bought any other kits. So I've made stuff for Tamiya Model Magazine, so I've done that. So I've been getting the odd kit here and there, but I haven't bought anything. So all my focus has been on this. This is my sort of itch that I need to scratch sort of thing. So I've been quite, focused on the approach to it.
Blimey. But in fairness, over that period of time in which it's taking you to build it, and you've not bought any models in that period, then realistically, when you break it down to how many models you may have bought, it's suddenly cost-effective for what you've done.
Exactly.
Because it's taking you so long to do. So,
yeah,
that makes complete sense.
I mean, the actual kit itself took 5 weeks.
Wow.
So, again, this is another one where people go, really? So I was working minimum of 12 hours a day to get it done. And I cancelled all work, basically, and just dedicated it because this is, you know, I've put so much time and effort into getting that far. You know, by the time the kit came out and I was free of work, I had 5 weeks up until Telford. So
yeah,
I finished at 5:20 in the morning of Telford. Oh, so I arrived very wired, and that first night I did actually sleep.
If it took that long to make the base and plan it and everything else, did you not consider then just waiting until the Telford after this Telford coming?
Well, if I did that, I'd be really frustrated because it's taken so long to get this far. And me being me and being quite obsessive, and when I go for something, I go for it. I want to get this done. I want to see the back of it. I want to see it on the table. That's my goal. Mm-hmm. I've been living with this idea for so long. I need to do everything I can do to get this across the line. So I think I was in the process of, I think I can do it. I know how to run a project. I did a multi-million pound project last year called Pollinations in Birmingham. Mm-hmm. So I was design director on that. So working with project managers and production managers. So I know how a project can run, and I know the pitfalls and so on. So I know how to forecast and also work through the process methodically, but also at a pace to get across the finish line. So that was, you know, it's looking tentative the whole way through, but actually by the time you get to kind of put the last few little photo etch bits on, you know, and then build the box for it to transport, then you can get in the car and then go. Yeah. That was the checkered flag, if you like, you know, that I was aiming for. Yeah. So, and it's not my typical way of working. The precursor to this model, in terms of the scale of it and how big it was, I did a McLaren MP44, the Senna McLaren, which is on my Instagrams, which was for Tamiya Model Magazine, and it was going to be a sort of diary build. That took 3 years to build on and off because it just took, I'm just very slow, I get bored and I put it down and then go off and do other stuff and then come back and, you know, it's a background thing, as it were, and that was a large kit, 1:8 scale. It weighed a lot as well because there are metal parts in it, and I put it on a large base, but then that was something I didn't want to keep. You know, I wanted to go through the process of building it, but I didn't want to keep it.
Right.
So then had a contact at McLaren. One thing led to another, then hand it over to Zach Brown, the CEO of McLaren, which was great. But that gave me the confidence to then build this Lancaster, which is so challenging, as it were, so daunting as a kind of the scale of it, the size of it, what you do with something like that, how do you handle it, how do you transport it, you know, what do you do with it afterwards? It's kind of, it's a bit of a beast to take on. I know this isn't for everybody. This is not a kind of you know, we're not preaching to everybody to kind of make big 132 scale four engine bombers. So
no, but you are preaching to the people that have ideas about models.
Yeah,
and take a long time to make them. I've got the best ideas, but I've got a couple of kits to do those things, but I just haven't had the time or, you know, whatever, to complete them. And I think everybody listening, including James, would also agree with me.
I used to multitask kits, as it were, but now I just concentrate on one, because then I can come in and out of that one kit, and that, you know, I'm always fearful of getting bored of it, but actually, you know, each kit has so many processes involved. The different stages that, you know, the kind of the process of building it is quite interesting in itself. So you can immerse yourself in that subject matter fully and then get it done, get it across the finish line.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I agree with what you just said there. You know, I go through phases where I do multiple models or just one, and I tend to find that if I just concentrate on one and I'm passionate about what I'm doing, the results are much better than dipping in and out of lots of different ones all over the place. Because to me, it feels, if you've got more than a couple of, like, more than a model going, it's a construction line, really. It's not, you're not necessarily getting the pleasure out of that kit because it's a production line.
Especially with the Lancaster as well, being such an amazing subject, actually getting into the subject matter. So even I get asked to do things that I'm not really interested in, you know, doing something for a magazine, but actually there's always something. If there's, you know, I did a snow cap and it had penguins with it. So I agreed to do it because it had penguins, but it was a really difficult thing to build.
Had penguins in the kit?
Yes. Yeah. 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 It's like a snow tractor, orange thing, you know, that is from, the Antarctic exhibition in 1957, I think it was. Is it Hillary? And these great big 3-ton tractors kept getting caught through, you know, in ravines and crevices and so on. So that was quite interesting. But yeah, the kit came with penguins, which was kind of the thing that, you know, if you can find some, you know, some little gem, some subject within the subject itself, then that keeps you motivated, I think. So
were there any fish in the water of the Lancaster?
Oh no. Yeah.
Oh, I see. Just wondering if there's any hidden animals.
Some little rocks and pebbles, but yeah. Not fish. I did go to Reculver actually on the anniversary of May the 13th in 2017. Yeah, just to log the wind direction and the colour of the water and the depth, you know, sort of what was the feel of it like and so on. So I don't think there were any fish there at that time. So yeah.
Okay. So what particular part of that build did you find the most challenging?
I think the waiting, because the Hong Kong model kit looked great. And that was something that was coming. And we saw the test shots of that, you know, the kind of prototype model at Telford, and it was big and impressive. And that was looking fantastic. And then that took 5 years, you know, from when they first announced it to seeing it. And then Richard Alexander coming with Wingnut Wings version. And that was just mouthwateringly fantastic. Obviously going to be more expensive, but for me that was the one I needed to commit to, because this is that project that requires as much commitment as possible. And then with lockdown, with, you know, wings and border models, that whole sort of story, as it were, that we all know, I think, you know, the waiting for that, and it really was a dilemma to, you know, do I just suck it up and build the Hong Kong one and convert that and put the oil canning texture on and add rivets and all of that kind of stuff. But did hold out for the border model one, even though it's going to be a very, very tight build and get it done for Telford. But at the time, I think that was the hardest part, was the waiting, because, you know, the water took a long time to build, the base took a long time. Just working, drawing on CAD, you know, sort of thinking this up is the nice part, because you're doing the dreaming. Actually doing the build part, building a box is quite standard. Doing the resin, that's a whole world of discovery, but there's a whole load of YouTube people out there, you know, who you know, you can go to YouTube school and learn all of that stuff, which is brilliant. You make mistakes, and I put gloss gel on the top to make the waves, the little ripples, and didn't like that. So I spent 2 days scraping all of that, you know, bust my hand, you know, scraping it off with a chisel, for instance, and then take it all back and then work out how I'm going to do the surface. And that was a whole other layer of resin. So basically that's discovering, you know, how to mold that with a stone and plasticine and do silicon molds and stuff. So basically it's just a, you know, it's an exercise in learning, And then, you know, the resin water is a whole other thing. And then the kit itself is kind of the, I'm going to say the easy bit. It's not easy at all, but that's unfamiliar territory sort of thing. So once you're building the kit, that's the home straight. But the hard part was the waiting.
With the actual physical splash. Is that built up in sections, or how did you achieve that? Because it just looks phenomenal.
Actually, it's just trial and error. So I all sound quite flippant, so I'll try not to sound flippant, but it is a case of experimenting with materials that you've got and looking at how people have done it before. So things like cotton wool or wadding make good fluff. I have different types of wadding in my workshop, you know, as you do. And this one is wadding that's from sleeping bags. So it's quite fibrous. It's not got, you know, cotton wool has kind of almost like snowballs in a sense within the fluff, as it were.
Yeah.
This doesn't. This is quite open. So it lets the light through quite well. Okay. So I just tried with using bits of snow and wooden scenic snow and micro balloons and so on with resin, with drawing a bit of this through, and also trying a bit of white paint in the resin as well, making it white. And just basically what I ended up doing was pulling a bit like a clump, like hair, sort of through with rubber gloves on, through a bowl of resin, and just drawing it out a bit like you'd sort of pull seaweed out of or pasta out of a pot, for instance, and then just laying it down on some plastic sheeting, let it go off, and then you've got lots and lots and lots of spears, lots of shards of these watery spray pattern pieces, as it were, and then it's a case of flower arranging. So they're pinned onto the foam, which is around the carbon fiber armature, cantilevered armature. You know, follow the silhouette of the photograph. Imagine what the backside of it looks like. Do a little kind of rough sketch. Pin it in, and once it's all pinned in with large hat pins, basically, is then pour other bits of resin through it, and it becomes quite hard. And you know, you can kick it around a bit. It's quite a robust thing.
Yeah.
So it lets the light through, which is really important, because it needs to feel like it's. This is the thing with sprayed water. The water's actually clear, but it's the whiteness comes from the refraction of light. So if you can replicate that in the model, that's the hard bit. That's the trick.
Gotcha. Nice.
Gosh, that's awesome. So it's the white is created by the same mechanism that white foam would be created in.
Yes. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So there is some snow sprinkled through it. I've got a bit of dirty water at the bottom, for instance, that you can sort of see coming up. But basically, it's wadding that's just been drawn through clear resin, and then it's just left. And what it does, it sort of, when it's layered up like that, it just refracts the light and it looks white. Right. So whatever the lighting condition is, so you talked about, you know, you asked about, you know, you didn't know where it would be positioned in Telford. Actually, it can be positioned anywhere because it'll just pick up the light and pick up the environment that it's in. So kind of it sits into the space it is.
You said that you used material from sleeping bags.
Yes.
Yeah. So what TOG is best?
I don't know. This is just what I had. So
I imagine you had lots of different types.
Yeah. You know, it's not that
super winter ones, really. Arctic ones.
It's really just going through life with your eyes open and thinking, oh, right, I'll pull from that source. I'll pull from that source and experiment and make a load of mistakes and being prepared to, accepting going into it that I'm going to make a load of mistakes. I just need to rectify certain ones that I don't like and keep them the happy accidents. So there's some, I've got a piece here actually. I'll show. So the actual dried resin, just the clear resin, looks like water droplets themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that on the, put some close-up photographs of the water on this, I think, as well. So I can send that through to you. And that shows actual water droplets as well. So that looks really realistic. So it's all frozen in time.
That's really cool. I absolutely love it. I mean, it's interesting that we spend our days looking at the floor, finding the best gravel and the best roots.
Exactly.
That look like trees. And that's what we do, isn't it? We're looking for the things that look small.
I think like with a painting, for instance, you know, it's paint on a canvas. It's not real skin. So how do you tell the story of what this is, you know, so you're not being totally literal in what you're using.
It's like someone explained to me about figure painting and putting thin layers on and all that sort of stuff. And the first time I did it, I just looked at it and went, I don't like that. It don't look right. Because it was up here with my magnifying glasses on and right up next to my face, and I could see all the different colours. But then when you put it away from yourself, you go, oh, actually, I've done really well with that.
Yep.
You know, you look at it and it's your eyes. Your eyes are making up the story.
Yeah, you're describing the kind of Monet effect in a sense there.
So yeah.
Figure paintings are a really interesting one. You see a lot of figure painting and they're very, very stark. Yeah, further away you get, it looks really good. So it's a whole dark art, that as well.
I don't get me wrong. I don't think I'm very good at it. Oh, well, I don't know where that is. It's over there somewhere. I've put it away somewhere safe. That's why I can't find it. So when I was at Telford once, I picked up some resin heads from Mitch's military modelling. Mm-hmm. So it's you won't be able to see it very well.
Yeah.
That was my third attempt at doing it. I would get to a certain point, so I would say probably about a third or maybe halfway through, and just look at it and go, oh, this isn't working. It's just not right. And on the third attempt, I'm just going to carry on because I'm not stripping it back and starting again. I'm just going to carry on. Yeah. And then just all of a sudden, it just went, oh.
It clicked.
How did that, what did I do? I've done something and I don't know what I did there.
It's also knowing when to stop as well. So it's not stopping because you're bored, but stopping when it's good, as it were.
There's no more value to carry on.
Exactly. Yeah. I've been thinking about it a lot lately as well, in terms of detail and allowing space, but also light and dark and colour temperature as well. So having these things that are quite exciting in contrast to each other. So it's not creating harsh contrast, but it's about having that conversation, especially with, you know, figure painting. It's kind of the lights and the darks, but also the detail. Do you have in there? Do you actually have the eyeballs or not? That's the old one.
Yeah. But the one thing I'm really proud of with that particular bust, the goggles have actually got glass in them.
Oh, really? Wow.
Because I wear contacts.
Yeah.
So I got one of my contacts out and cut it and stuck it in where the goggles went.
Amazing.
I went, oh, yeah, that'll work well.
Wow.
So I now got a whole string of used contact lenses in a little bag somewhere, just in case I might need a bit of glass. That then gave me the ability to not worry about the glass effect.
Wow.
So
again, you know, sort of contact lenses, who'd have thought that, you know, so yeah.
Gosh. Yeah, you can't mold them into canopies, unfortunately. I've tried.
No. You have tried. Yeah. Dials, I guess, would be good then.
Yes. Yeah, if you're talking a big size,
yeah.
And you're cutting them down into like with a punch or something, then absolutely. Yeah.
Sounds good.
But they're great to practice on because a lot of the little heads have either got some leather or they've got hair or they've got a cap or something. There's loads of different textures within that bust that you can really play with, which is super fun. So I love them. Yeah. I'll go to sell for the Nickamore because I'll be cross, but
Hey, model makers. Are you tired of being told what colors to paint your models? Are you tired of the mainstream paint companies controlling your creativity? Well, we have the solution for you. Our model paints come in every color imaginable, including colors you've never even heard of before. For example, British Tooth Yellow, Blood Pressure Pink, Urinal Cake Blue, and our new Nipple Brown. So take back control of your model making and try our paint today. Hugh will love it.
It's like in the old cinemas having an interval, isn't it?
That's right. But in our case, we wouldn't have someone walking around with popcorn. It would be a tray of hobnobs.
That's true. Yes. Yeah, we would. Yeah.
About the water, just to go back to that a minute ago, you were talking about the massive amount of research and measuring the table at Telford.
Yeah.
What I want to know is, did you take a little bit of that resin to Telford to test your light theory?
No, that's a good question. But I did do a lot of tests with 10 centimeter square pieces of resin that were a centimeter deep to get a little bit scientific, to get the colours right, because The idea for this was to get that light translucency within the water layer to make it look like it's deeper than it actually is. You know, I tried small samples, so, you know, I'm not spending much on resin at this point doing the sample, but getting a little drop of dark green, little drop of dark blue, little drop of buff, for instance, buff goes with everything, and you know, desert yellow or something, you know, so it's just a toothpick drop in that quantity of resin, for instance, colors it really nicely, so it gives it a tint. And what are those like when they're layered up? So these, you know, this can be two pores in two different layers, and then what's underneath? So I photoshopped some different color gradations, if you like, underneath, so all together they start to make the correct color for the water near the shoreline. So the water color changes at Reculva as it goes out, because it's a pebble beach. The pebbles have a certain color, and then, you know, that mixes with the water layer and with the light, you know, the light quality as well there. So actually going there on a walk was really key to that. So yeah, so I didn't test at Telford, but I figured that if this ties together as a whole, it doesn't matter, because the lighting at Telford is variable, you could say.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
How do we be polite about the lighting in Telford? Or,
to be honest, the Telford lighting in places is very good, and in places it's not so good. The only way I could describe it, at one particular model show, which I won't name, but it was a little bit like being in a tanning salon.
Sure.
Everything had an orange glow to it. So, yeah that lighting in shows can be quite destroying for a model maker, if I'm honest.
Luckily it was in the kind of third hall, and the lighting was quite bright there.
As long as everybody's under the same lighting, then the whole competition,
as long as all the parts of this model are in the same place,
it casts a shadow over all the other models. Just in IPMS's defense, to light that amount of area would be quite expensive.
It's the Telford, it's International Centre's lighting, not IPMS, you know, they're not in control of it, but we're not in control of the lighting that is in the hall, wherever we might take this. So, you know, different shows do light things specifically or not, and there might be daylight flooding in, for instance, like there was in from the Euromodel Expo, and, you know, they've got large skylights, so there were large sort of shafts of light creating large shadows on the models there. So that, but that changed as well through the day, so depending on what time you're seeing it, and it's varied,
With the particular story in which you've chosen to tell with the Lancaster, is there any personal connection with that at all?
It was something that I saw, it started with the idea of the water and then the connection with aircraft, because my thing's flying, so, you know, aircraft and water together. That was my initial hook, if you like, and then getting into it, it's like, oh, right, Barnes Wallace, hello. Being an inventor and marbles and skipping marbles across water and so on. And then, you know, you watch the film 1,000 times and my old studio, and there's a brown plaque on the wall near Haberdasher School, and that's for Barnes Wallace. And it's like, look into that a little bit more. And then you watch the YouTube videos about similarities between Star Wars and the Dam Busters, and then you start to get into that, and I'm into Star Wars. So I don't have a personal connection, but there are lots of lines of interest. That's why I kind of had to do it. I was just compelled to do this thing. It was a calling, in a sense, rather than just an interest, as it were. It's, you know, it's not, this is not something I can't do. So I just have to do it.
I guess you have to kind of see it that way to be able to build something as big and as grand as that. You really need to get into it. It's not something you could just have in the background.
One question at Telford, one guy said, was the resin expensive? And I just said, yes, you know, this is not a money saving exercise. I've spent a considerable amount of money on this project, but
yes,
I'm committed to myself and the idea to do that. And also it will stand out for all the reasons it does, for instance, and it deserves that.
Yeah. What other questions did you have at Telford? Any that annoyed you or any that you liked?
There was one guy right at the very end who was hanging around on the fence waiting for me to pack it down, because this has to be done after everybody else has packed theirs down, because the thing's so heavy.
Yeah,
you don't want to knock anybody else's, you know, relative terms, fragile piece compared to this great big beast of a base. And he was hanging around and he was just stood there watching, And he said he's just waiting for me to dismantle it. As soon as I slotted the Lancaster off and put it in its box, he was sort of a bit miffed because it's so simple. And then the plume slots off. So the question that people ask is, how do you transport it? And it's in three pieces, basically. So the base is one big box, and then the plume is separate. So that's the right part, piece of the arm. So think of it like a kind of angle poise lamp, in a sense.
Right.
Fixed joints, but basically each piece slots off. And I've used carbon fiber kite rods and joints for those. So it's kind of very secure engineering, or very firm brass tubes and carbon fiber. So it keeps it light, but actually the whole thing slots off itself. Yeah, so the whole thing can go in the van.
So what was this chap miffed because it was so easy, because there was no spectacle?
Yeah, there was no magic to it. I think he was waiting for something special, and actually it was so simple that the plane just slotted off. It's because it's got two carbon fiber rods that run parallel in the fuselage that are boxed in, and those two sort of spigots that stick out of it where the rear turret is, they just slot out of the tubes that are in the plume, and then the plume just slots off as well.
So
it was very simple. That was the other conundrum, is it, where how do you make an aircraft look like it's flying and held in motion, especially when it's cantilevered over, in this case, over the water, you know, without the kind of perspex rod sticking out the back end, you know, which looks, it's effective, but you see how it's done, sort of thing. So there's no magic. How do you do this where there's no magic, where you're hiding the magic, as it were? And that's what, that's what this was. This hides the magic really well. Actually, when you peek behind the curtain, so to speak, it's really simple. A lot of people have asked as well, oh, the props should spin. You know, why aren't they motorized? And that was a big conundrum with this, because it would look good and it'd have some movement, and things that have movement attract your attention. But actually the dynamic of the water and the stillness of the whole thing, where it's captured in a millisecond, like the film image, you know, the film still, I thought about not having the propeller blades on, but just having the cones, looks like an aircraft in flight in that sense. I don't know how the judges might mark that down. I don't know. I'm not experienced in competition. So put the blades on, and actually they're just frozen in time. So the whole thing's just a freeze frame.
I'm with you on the time freezing thing.
We've spoken about this before. I mean, the good thing about your particular depiction is that you're using a picture. You look at the picture and you can see the stillness in the picture. Although, from what I recall, you had a series of pictures with the main frame highlighted that you were working on. Was that right?
So to show the film, you know, that we've seen before, but show you know, and just highlight which actual cell is from the
I think for that choice it is very, very much the right choice. But and it's always been
I can do what I want. Everybody
that's right. I mean, I'm a great one for that. You know, it's your model, and I might not necessarily understand all the I might not interpret everything you're trying to tell me with your model, but certainly in this particular scenario, everything you did, actually, now you've explained the amount of research, the amount of effort you've gone into, I can understand why it looks like it does.
Sure.
It's the honest truth.
The thing with working on it so much is that you can start to justify each thing. So it's not a decision on a whim or because I feel like it. It's there's a justification behind each element to it, as it were. So it becomes quite thorough, I think, in that sense.
Yeah. Reflecting what Malcolm says is, you know, it's the one thing I'd love to see my model aircraft flying.
Mm.
But I'm not a fan of the perspex rods. I'm just not a fan of I'm not a fan of a brass rod, because that looks even more odd.
Yeah.
But you know, it just doesn't look right to me. But that's my interpretation. It's not that it's wrong, because that's not the case at all. It's just the way my brain processes that what I'm looking at, it just doesn't look right to me. We've spoken about this before, me and Malcolm, and I quite like lights on a model to a point. But as soon as you put a flashing light on, you then, as you alluded to earlier, you then introduced a movement within a steel model.
Exactly. Yeah.
And those two don't work, in my opinion.
I think that's the problem that railway layouts suffer from, isn't it? Everything else is still. And the railway, you know, the trains and the carriages, and it was all moving. And it'd be lovely if everything could be moving. And then obviously they try with the trucks moving around and lights going on and off, and ultimately it's static, you know. And I don't know about I don't feel right about mixing those two still and moving things, but sure. It's their own, you know. Yeah, I said we weren't going to poo-poo railways, and I haven't. Okay, so don't write in.
No, you haven't, not at all. And you know, I would say that, you know, if you ever get the chance to go to the, I can't remember the exact name of it, but the place in Hamburg, mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. they've got the big model. Oh my god! I mean, I've said it a billion times. I'm not a railway fan, but if you want to go and see a layout, that's the layout to go and look at, because it's just awesome. There's just so much going on. I mean, don't get me wrong, the fact that they've got an airport where they have model planes flying in and out, you know, it's just amazing. So, yeah, movement in a model is always seems a bit weird to me. And there are ways of simulating movement, which yep. should be adequate enough, I think. But obviously, you've taken on this amazingly long process, long project, and you've had effectively a year off. So I'm guessing you must be starting or certainly well in the way of planning your next 3-year venture. What are you going to be doing next?
That's a good question. So nothing of this scale. You know, you asked the question about how did you start, or, you know, when did you mm-hmm. start making models? So as a kind of wind down from this, I went to ADH Publishing, who published Tommy Model Magazine, and spent a day with Marcus, who's the editor, and came away with a few kits, as you do, that are, you know, sitting there, and samples and so on. And I made a 747, the Revell 747, 1:144 scale. Mm-hmm. So that was in December, which is when the last 747 rolled off the production line in the Boeing factory. And yeah. So I did an experiment with the green sort of, it's not primer, it's like a kind of protective coat that's on the skin. Yeah. So I did that as a kind of wind down, as a way to remember what the first model I did was by doing the last aircraft, the last 747 that's come out of the factory. There's some sort of poetry in that somehow. It's a bit tenuous, but did that as a wind down, and then smashed out a Tamiya Betty in, what was it, 22 days. And I had a friend over actually from Australia who stayed for 10 days of that. So I wasn't modeling. So actually that was quite quick. It's a Tamiya kit. It's going to, I wanted something that was going to go together easily, and was an experiment in chipping and weathering. And that was kind of fun. So again, we were talking about figures earlier, figure painting. So the figures were actually the hard part of that kit. Yeah. So that's going to be on the cover of Tamiya Model Magazine in May. So that's coming out next. So you'll see that. And I'm doing a ICM yak now. So I'm doing something with one engine. I'm throwing a bit of photo etch in there. So that'll be a nice, easy one to do. And I do have a plan for, I've got a perfect grade Gundam kit. I've got a small stash. That's a kit I had from Japan, which there's some sort of Sistine Chapel, Michelangelo type idea, again using resin, some kind of portal vortex thing that's quite a vertical sculpture using that kit. I don't know what yet, but infinity mirrors might be part of it. I don't know. Again, this has been sitting there for a while. The idea will come at some point. I just need to keep walking around with my eyes open, and inspiration will, the nugget of it, you know, the key thing that holds it all together will turn up at some point, and I just have to be open to it. So I'm just being patient. That's going to be the thing in the future at some point. But for now, sticking to kind of regular kits that are straightforward, and not going to be buying lots and lots and lots of black paint. And actually, on the Lancaster, there's no black paint.
Oh, isn't there?
No, so all black is not black. Yeah, I'll be buying single pots of paint, not multiple, and keeping it fairly simple. Yeah.
So you said you don't have a big stash. So how many kits do you have?
So I came back from Germany with two kits, and that means I've got now 12.
Ah, right.
Wow.
Yeah. 1,200. That's what you were going to say.
To hand.
Yeah.
For this Lancaster project, I did buy two border model kits. and I bought the Hong Kong one when it came out, and I bought the Iconic Air resin conversion kit, and I went to Japan in 2016 and I bought the Tamiya Dambuster 148 scale as well. It's only 50 quid. So I kind of spent my money on those.
Yeah. If you've done so many experiments and so many builds, do you have like another one spare almost?
Because of the glazing on the border model kit with the spider lines running through the glazing, yeah. That was my worry mm-hmm. with it, that I was going to try. Well, I did polish out the spider lines. So it starts off as 0.4 millimeter thick. And I spent 3 days hand polishing it all out okay. to get it clear. And yeah. if I broke it, then I had a spare kit. So it's a very expensive thing to keep in backup, but it was my kind of motivation to kind of not make a boo-boo of the clear pieces yeah. as I was doing them. Yeah, I've actually sold that spare one, and then the Hong Kong one is going to go up for sale soon, and with the Tamiya one as well. So those large boxes will be out of here. Yeah.
And whereabouts are they going to be for sale?
Probably eBay, or they can just contact me through Instagram if they wanted to buy one.
That was something in which I wondered, was you were naming all those different kits you got, and I was like, oh, now is there going to be another Lancaster, or is he completely Lancaster out?
Lancaster out. Tend to get bored, so I quite like eclectic subjects. So I'd say I'm an aircraft modeler, but I do all sorts of different things. So yeah, I think it's good to vary it. Personally, I see the kind of rows of Harriers and or Tornadoes at the kind of SIG on the display benches, and to me, I would sort of die if I did the same thing over and over again. So I do have to change things up. So I could do another Lancaster, but I don't know. I played it in 2.5 weeks this time. Pretty much quicker now. I know all the shortcuts. But,
that's right. Yeah,
I mean, the good thing with this Dambuster one is, I didn't have to do all the turrets. I did one front turret, and the bomb bay is mostly covered up. Parts of it are scratch built, and the rear fuselage is all sanded down and re-riveted and re-textured and so on. There's a lot of work in it, but actually I think there's a lot of work in the turrets and the machine gun mechanisms and so on. And I should plug as well, so Fishkop Model Company were amazing at sending me the 3D resin printed fairing for the bomb bay for the conversion for this. And Christopher, who designs and 3D prints these things, he's done machine gun mechanism, and it's working. It's a working printed mechanism. It printed out of one piece, but it all works. So it's all the articulation is in there as well. So it's more detailed than the kit. And when you know how detailed this X-Wing Not Wings kit is, that's quite, that's saying something. And on this fairing as well, the hinges work. So you need a 1 millimeter pin in the hinges. So it's printed with these holes, and it's just incredible, the technology now today that can do these. So yeah, Christopher sent that over to me from Germany, and that arrived the week before the show. So yeah, I was very much against it.
Wow.
In terms of your model making hobby, do you belong to a model club? Do you go on, do you frequent a model forum? Or online or anything?
Not really, because it is my kind of time off. It's like the kind of meditation time. And I have met some amazing people through and in modelling, and quite a few of those are through the kite world as well. Because I'm still involved in the kite world as well, and me being quite obsessive, I've got to be careful. I'm not on Facebook, because if I was, I'd be on Facebook all the time. I sort of keep it fairly low key, as it were. So, this is kind of a big splash, as it were, the Lancaster. So, it's worth making a song and dance about. But actually, I'm fairly, sort of low key, keep myself to myself and, not get too involved. It would be nice to see what a club is about. And I'm in South London. I've seen that there's one in Croydon and there's one in South London somewhere. Yeah, I haven't made moves to kind of go along and say hello or anything.
My follow-up then is, do you use modelling as an escape, or, would you, like to make money out of it? Would you like professional modelling, or?
So modelling for me is like a meditation in a way, a bit like walking the park. It's a way to kind of, like I describe kite flying in terms of the telescope or the binoculars pointing outwards. This is a way to kind of look inwards, as it were. Yes. So I tend to use it as that kind of introverted creative space to kind of go inside myself a little bit, go inside my own thoughts and keep my hands busy, a bit like knitting in a sense. So your hands are busy and you're concentrating on a subject and your mind is left to wander. So it's a little bit like that. You know, it's not a money-making exercise at all. If it was, I wouldn't be doing this Lancaster. I don't know who would be able to, who could afford it. You know, sort of, I think the, you know, the hours and the thought process and the planning and the actual, you know, money spent, I think, you know, it's kind of, it would put it out outside. I mean, if somebody does want to buy it, great. You know, let's talk prices, but
You know,
let's make sure we're sitting down first. I don't think modelling for me is a money making exercise.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. In fact, probably completely the opposite then.
Yes.
I would have said for you. Yeah.
Money wasting exercise.
Money wasting. But you know, sanity inducing.
Absolutely. And,
you know, you can get through your day possibly a bit easier.
You know, over the years, you know, I had to closed my business in 2010. And like I said about the Spitfire, that was the thing that was kind of my soul searching, my safe space, the place that I went into when I was at my lowest sort of. Actually it became something that I reconnected with the younger me, you know, somewhere where, you know, I was not vulnerable as it were. So this, you know, something that I'm good at, and I reconnected with a part of me that's been there the whole time, then actually helped to bring back some courage and confidence, and that's continuing as well. So, you know,
well, that's brilliant. So it gives you sort of motivation to get up and go, and you know, get creating something, and that's brilliant. Yeah,
definitely.
That's what One Awaken does for so many people. It just gives them the ability to cast away the general days or general world stuff that's all sat on their shoulders, and concentrate on a little bit of something in front of them that gives them that release. And yeah, brings the parts of you that have been buried under all the other stuff. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I totally get that.
Where can people find you on Instagram?
So my Instagram is CR_scalemodels.
Is that where you would prefer to be contacted?
Yes, yeah.
Go and check CR_models out, because they've done a very, very clever thing with the photographs. And I've seen before. I don't know if it's a normal thing that Instagram does, or whether it's just a thing that Carl does with his photos of the Lancaster. Go and have a look.
Yeah, quite a few people have done it. It's a grid, basically. So, there's another app that you can go to that creates that. So it does it for you. There's no sort of magic to it, in a sense. And I will put some more detailed stuff up. So I'm kind of, that side of things is fairly new, obviously, since the Lancaster, since November. So the McLarens, the thing that I'm putting up at the moment, because that was in Tamiya Model Magazine and that got a great response there. And it's also a precursor to the Lancaster. So the two do link to each other. And then I'm going to be putting up the other smaller kits, the more regular size, the more accessible stuff up there as well, with some detail. Drawing is my first language and English is my second. So I'm very good at talking pictures, and Instagram is the best place to actually speak.
Good idea. Brilliant. Thank you so much, Carl. Your Lancaster was my talking point of Telford. It was the thing that I kept telling people to go and have a look at. Have you seen the?
Great. Fantastic.
And, it was just a joy. I'm really pleased that you made it, because it was fun to look at. And I enjoyed guessing how it's done, and all the questions that I've given you tonight as well now been answered. So, fascinating. And I'm fascinated that it took you, well, I don't know why I'm surprised, but I'm fascinated to hear how long it took from inception, to the reality and it done. You know, it's interesting, that period of time. But thank you very much for coming along, Carl.
Thank you. Great. Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. I mean, for me personally, it was the model of the year last year.
Oh, amazing.
And you are actually the first modeler I've actually contacted and asked permission to use an image on a front cover of a calendar.
Thank you so much for that.
Yeah, my pleasure. It wasn't my pleasure at all. It was my honour, actually, to be allowed to do that. Like I say, it's not something I really thought of before, because the calendar that I'm talking about is for the Model Officers Mess, and it does showcase everybody's work that goes on that group. It's actually made me think that it's maybe something I should actually do, is to have an opportunity to say to people, what was your model of the year? and then approach the person and say, I want to use that on that calendar, and the front cover is actually something which I've adopted for this year. We will be doing that. I'm so jealous of Malcolm for the fact he saw it in person. But yeah, congratulations, honestly. It's a wonderful piece, without a doubt.
Thank you.
Cheers, Carl.
Thank you very much.
So it would seem simple ideas are always the best, even though it may take time to think of it from design concept.
Making a modelling subject in which you have a passion for can be all-encompassing, but allows you the ability to be also self-absorbing.
Next time, we will be just making conversation about other subjects relating to this daft hobby of ours. You have been listening to Just Making Conversation with
James Skiffins
and Malcolm Childs.
Follow us on Facebook, where we post photos, updates and other nonsense.
Find us on Spotify, Amazon Music, iTunes, Google Podcasts and all the others.
Let us know what you've just been making and what your thoughts are on the conversation in this podcast.
Thank you to the following supporters from buymeacoffee.com JMC Podcast.
Oh, here we go. Elliot Capredi, Adam, Kieran, Trust the Lagoon, Craig Nichols, Elliot, Robert Lane, Dean, Mike Shelley, Ivan Build a Model Kit, Callum from Micro Machines Podcast, Paint All the Middies, Peter, Brad, Warren, Tim, Black Rifle, John, Julian, Chuck, Mark, Bakawawi, Simon the Jersey Gent, Steve, Lee, Costas, Mark, Ray, Neil twice, Mike, Robert, Andrew, Jew, Tron, Mike, a second time, Jeff, Richard, Lynn, Gordon, and eight others.
If you do show your support, leave a name so we can paint the roll of honour on the tail of the next episode. You've got to do that before the music runs out.
Mm-hmm.
And those names are getting longer.
They are.
That music ain't getting any shorter.
I got a newsflash for you. We are going to shorten the names. So if you haven't given us a cup of coffee, since season two, we will be removing your name from the roll of honour.
So who said that? When did we decide that?
I just said it. Because it does say in what we just said, if you show your support, leave your name, we'll print it on the roll of honour of the next episode. So in theory...
Oh, I see. Yes. But the thing is you're painted on the aeroplane that is just making conversation. You know, your name is painted on there forever. They don't go, we're going to stick it on there for this week and then next week going to rub it off.
I gotcha.
You're there forever.
Oh, forever.
Yeah, I don't know how we're going to deal with it when it gets longer, but if we ever get that many listeners.
Well, there you go. There's a challenge, listeners. The more names that are up there, the more difficult it will be for us to read it. And you'll be tuning in to Just Making Conversation reading names.
Goodbye.
Oh, yeah, goodbye. And just remember to the Moose Rear Wrangler, I've got just as big pig tits as Malcolm has for fingers.
I thought you said Malcolm has big tits then. Did you say pig tits?
Pig tits. Pig tits. Pig tits. For goodness sake, honestly.
You're going to get in trouble. I'll cut that out.